The British Parliament will begin debating Theresa May's Brexit plan for a second time today as the British Prime Minister braces for a final vote on the deal next week. Theresa May was forced to pull the plan from the House of Commons in December when it became clear that it would suffer a heavy defeat. 2.5 years on from a popular referendum, the decision to leave the EU continues to be the major challenge facing British politicians and diplomats. Among those diplomats is Menna Rawlings. She's the High Commissioner here to Australia, and she's served in the role since 2015. She's set to round out her time in the job later this month, and the High Commissioner joins us this morning in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Cathy. Great to be here.
We are going to reflect on your time here in Australia, but first let's talk about the UK.
Sure.
Theresa May is continuing to fight for her Brexit plan. How confident are you at this stage that Britain will leave the EU on March the 29th with a deal?
So that's absolutely what we're working towards, Cathy. And as you've set out, the next step of that is to get a vote, what we call a meaningful vote, on the withdrawal agreement through the British Parliament. I think, as you and everybody knows, that's been quite challenging, but work on that continues. And it's been confirmed overnight that that vote will take place next Tuesday. So I think as diplomats, you know, our focus is on continuing to plan for the deal to go through. We expect to leave the EU absolutely on the 29th of March as planned. And, you know, we very much hope that the deal that Theresa May has negotiated is the basis on which we exit the European Union.
Although overnight, Britain's Parliament approved financial roadblocks that are pretty much designed to make sure that it's more difficult for the UK to leave the EU without a Brexit deal. Does that signal to you that Parliament could reject Theresa May's deal and package next Tuesday?
Yeah. Well, we have, like Australia, a very healthy parliamentary democracy. And obviously, there's an awful lot of manoeuvring and positioning in advance of next Tuesday's vote. But I think, you know, that comes from a position of people just really, really caring and really wanting to get this right. And I think the vote overnight shows that there are concerns about a no deal, which actually the government shares. But we also think it's sensible to make contingency planning in case it isn't possible to get a deal through the British Parliament. But either way, our expectation is that we will leave the EU on the 29th of March because that is what the British people have voted for. And I think, you know, in all of this, it's really important to remember that this is about delivering the outcome of a democratic process in the UK, which delivered a certain result, and we need to get on with it.
We're certainly hearing reports that police numbers have been stepped up outside the British Parliament, with MPs warning of a deteriorating public order. Just how tense has this transition been, and what's the worry about next week's vote?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think let's keep it in proportion. For the most part, this debate in the UK has happened peacefully, respectfully, and with the opportunity for every side to have their say. That said, of course, there's concern when some of the anger, you know, starts to erupt in ways which are frankly worrying to see. Of course, you know, isn't that long ago we had the murder of Labour MP Joe Cox in Britain, and that wasn't linked directly to Brexit. But I think, you know, it does show that we all need to focus on respect in our political discourse, and that goes in countries like Australia as much as it does in countries like the UK.
Let's step back a bit. Yeah. I mean, the referendum vote was close. I'm just wondering, from a diplomat's point of view, how this has changed Britain's place in the world.
Yeah. So, you know, I like to say that in Australia, I think I've been really fortunate because I think I'm in a part of the world which is at the opportunity end, if you like, of the Brexit spectrum. And certainly over my time in Australia, since the vote took place, I've seen a real step up in terms of Britain's interest in this part of the world, in the Australia relationship, but also working with countries like Australia in the region. And in fact, we announced last year that we're going to be opening 3 new diplomatic posts in this region, in the Pacific, part of a broader step up of British diplomatic engagement around the world. And, you know, my view is that what Brexit will lead to is a Britain that is more open, more outward looking, more engaged with a wider range of international partners around the world, because, you know, frankly, we're going to have to work harder, I think, to maintain our influence and our presence in the world. And that's what I've absolutely seen during my time in this job. And it's quite exciting, I've got to say. There's a lot of exciting opportunities.
And certainly from an Australian perspective, Brexit represents an opportunity, and particularly around trade. Yeah. Our Trade Minister, Simon Birmingham, is looking to get to work on a trade deal. But he is warning that Theresa May's plan could slow down that if the UK remains in the European Customs Union after it leaves the EU. Is that trade deal on shaky ground?
So there's a few things on that, Cathy. I mean, first of all, it's important to say we can't actually start negotiating, just to be clear, until we actually exit the EU. What we have been doing is warming it up so that the moment when we are ready to negotiate, we can move quickly. And we've had a lot of support from Simon Birmingham and his team on that. And I think we're anticipating an ambitious trade agreement as quickly as we're able to get there. And again, just to be clear, Theresa May's deal does not suggest Britain will remain permanently in a customs union. There will be an implementation period during which we will be able to negotiate and sign and ratify free trade deals. And then out of the implementation period, when that ends at the end of 2020, then we'll be able to, you know, implement those deals. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, and we've had some really good discussions with the Australian government about that already.
And so if all the stars align for Theresa May next week, how soon would you expect those discussions to happen between Australia and the UK, and how soon would you expect to see a deal in place?
Sure. Well, we would like to start negotiations as soon as possible after the 29th of March. And if, you know, if Theresa May's deal goes through, as you say, then I think we'll be very well placed to do that.
The other possible upside for Australians, of course, is the changing visa regime.
Yes.
What's on the cards here?
Sure. Well, again, this is an exciting area of opportunity, I think. There's been a few announcements already. So one that's made a lot of Australians happy is that e-gates at British ports and airports will be open to Australians and Canadians and Japanese and US citizens from next summer. And I know that will really be welcome in terms of just easing entry into the UK, particularly through places like Heathrow, where
there's not a drone flying around.
When there's not drones, but there are sometimes queues. So I think the e-gates will certainly help with that. But if you look at our white paper on immigration, which was published just before Christmas, I think it gives a sense of the sort of further opportunities that will open up for skilled migrants who want to live and work in the UK, with a really strong focus, I think, in the UK on making it easier for people that we need to support our economy, to help us deliver jobs and growth to the British people, to be able to move to the UK. So there'll be specific measures. For example, at the moment, if you want to switch from one visa category to another, you have to come all the way back to Australia and apply. That's going to be possible in country. And again, given how far away Australia is, I know that's a practical step that will be welcomed by a lot of people. And then finally, I think within the context of the free trade agreement, this is an area we want to really look at in terms of making sure that on both sides, it's as easy as possible for our skilled migrants to live and work in each other's countries.
You're listening to RN Breakfast. The times are 14 minutes past eight, and this morning we're talking to the UK High Commissioner to Australia, Menna Rawlings, who is about to return back to the UK after 4 years on our shores. Menna, in terms of your time here, it's been a pretty extraordinary period, both for the UK, as we've talked about with Brexit, but also for Australia. So we've seen churn of prime ministers in the UK and Australia. How would you reflect on the past 4 years?
Yeah, I think it has been quite a remarkable period, as you say, in lots of different ways, sort of starting with some of the turbulence that we've seen in the international system, and then also, yes, in some of our own political systems. And, you know, one of my reflections is that of the sort of Five Eyes partners, none of us have got the same prime minister or president or foreign minister or defence minister that we had when I arrived 4 years ago. So there's a lot of churn.
Does that make the work of a diplomat harder?
I think it makes it more interesting, to be honest.
That's a very diplomatic answer.
Well, I'm a diplomat, so there you go. But I mean, I think, you know, the way I think of it is that in those circumstances, having someone like me here for 4 years means that the expertise and the longevity that we develop in terms of our relationships with key people in Australia really matter. And we really sort of hold the ring on the relationship sort of between different political leaders. But all of that said, I think the other thing that the sort of turbulence means is that where there is trust between nations, and there's deep trust between our two countries. And the Lowy Index shows that 90% of Australians trust Britain to do good in the world. You know, we really lean into that trust. And what I've seen is us getting even closer with Australia in order to stand up our values and our interests in quite a sort of choppy and turbulent international system.
And you talk about that trust, yet we know that the trust in institutions is at a record low amongst most Western nations and the voters there. And that churn that we've seen in the political spectrum has certainly assisted that low level of trust.
Yeah.
In terms of your role as a diplomat, where do you see that in trying to reinforce the importance of institutions?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. I mean, I think diplomats do have a role in terms of trying to rebuild or build trust in the institutions you describe. I think there's a couple of ways we can do that. One is, you know, we have to keep speaking truth to power in terms of the feedback and the advice that we give our ministers, and make sure that, you know, we still have the opportunity to provide expert analysis and for our voices to be heard in terms of policy making. That's really important.
Has WikiLeaks made that harder?
So I don't think WikiLeaks per se or in isolation has made that harder. I think that in the freedom of information age, where there is much greater transparency, and I welcome transparency, I think it's important. I think, you know, we do have to be mindful of, you know, what we say and how we say it, and be very careful in, you know, quoting people directly. For example, I was saying on a separate interview recently, you know, when I write something, I do think, how would I feel if this leaked? You know, I think we need to reflect on that, but I don't think that can stop us doing our job. There is still absolutely a role for private advice on issues of national interest. But the other place where I think we can really build trust is in the work we do to support British nationals, or, you know, Australian diplomats do to support Australian nationals around the world, because ultimately, you know, the taxpayer pays my wages. And how we respond when people, you know, many, many tourists come here from the UK, 700,000 a year, and when those people have bad times and have distressing situations, how we get involved and help them, I think, is really important. And that can also really help to rebuild trust.
Okay, then.
So I'm quite passionate about that area of work, including in this country.
We've got we're up against time, so we've only got about a minute left.
Sure.
There, but I do want to hear your reflection on a positive thing about your time here that you see.
Yeah. So I would probably summarise it as the three S's. So ships and sports.
The frigates.
Yeah, and sports. So just to explain to your listeners, ships is the decision by the Australian government to buy a British designed by BAE Systems for the next generation of Australian frigates, a £20 billion deal. It'll lock us into a multi-decade strategic defence partnership. Brilliant. The sport, you know, everything from the Ashes to the Commonwealth Games, the Invictus Games, just a great Aussie-British banter and celebration of our sporting links has been really fantastic. And then on a more frivolous note, the S is for sunshine, because, you know, goodness knows I've had a lot more of that in Australia. And I'd love to take a bit of that back with me to the United Kingdom, but, you know, we can but hope.
I'm sure you'll be back to visit and get a bit more of that sunshine down the track.
I absolutely will be, yes.
Thank you so much for coming in today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Cathy.
That's the UK High Commissioner to Australia, outgoing, Menna Rawlings. It's 8:20.